This is a Fan 590 podcast. Go to fan590.com and sign up to automatically receive the latest reports, features, and Fan 590 show highlights. This is Primetime Sports on the Fan Radio Network, Rogers Sportsnet, and Sirius Channel 97.
Greetings, one and all. It is Primetime Sports for Tuesday, April 6th. No, Wednesday, April 7th on the Fan Radio Network, Rogers Sportsnet, and Sirius Channel 97. This is the nation's most watched and listened to sports talk presentation, and I'm Jeff Blair of the Globe and Mail, sitting in for Bob McCowan, who's off for the rest of the week. And we'll be back on Monday. Very pleased to be joined by my Globe and Mail colleague and co-host, Stephen Brent, fresh from seeing the Drive-By Trucker show last night.
Yeah, good show. Very good show.
They do put on a good show. I've seen them a couple of times.
Yeah, it was excellent. In a hot, sweaty, claustrophobic place.
Oh, God. Yeah. I can just imagine you being hot.
Full of guys with tractor hats on.
Yeah, there you go. They're an acquired taste. And speaking of acquired tastes, I'm searching for segue all the time. We are pleased to be joined by Herb Zerkowski of the Montreal Gazette and Ed Tate of the Winnipeg Free Press. Gentlemen, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having us. Very clever segue. I got to give you credit. That's good.
Yeah, you know me. I mean, I'm always searching for a segue. But there's a segue, but never mind. Anyhow, we have you gentlemen on to talk about a story Herb had in the Gazette today. Nice work, by the way, Mr. Zerkowski.
Thank you. You taught me everything I know, Mr. Blair.
Well, I think that's about it for the show. We'll be back. No. Essentially, Herb's story was the Canadian Football League Players Association is kind of preparing its members for the possibility of a lockout. I, of course, earlier in the show kind of made fun of the fact that I can't think of any players association that would have less leverage or any league that would have less of a chance for a lockout or any type of labor stoppage in the CFL, just because I don't think there's a hell of a lot of money in it. And Mr. Brent came on to tell me that, of course, there's revenue being generated and revenue must be dealt with. Herb, how serious is this? And Ed, to you as well, but we'll start with Herb. How serious is this? Is this, you know, does this have any legs? Are we looking at any type of labor stoppage?
Well, I think it's very serious. I certainly agree with you that I think it's far-fetched to think that this little mom-and-pop league, eight-team league, would have any kind of a serious work stoppage. So I think if it comes to that, it's not going to be very long. But you know what? There certainly is some money involved here, and I spoke to an agent today who told me that a lot of players are coming to him and saying, yeah, you know, this is serious, and we are expecting a lockout. We are expecting a work stoppage. And I think the other thing that jumps out at me is certainly in previous contracts, when they were up for renewal, Rick LaLisher, the Edmonton Eskimos president, worked on the last one. Hugh Campbell, again, a former player, head coach, and general manager in Edmonton, was involved. And at this time, the CFL has hired itself an honest-to-goodness labor lawyer in Stephen Chammy. And that seems to indicate to me that the league is prepared to roll up its sleeves, and it means business.
Ed, what do you think?
Well, I'd be shocked, I guess, if it came to the point that there would be a work stoppage. But I think what Herb's story revealed and what we've been hearing whispers of is that it's two sides drawing a line in the sand, and it just speaks of the seriousness of the negotiations. Usually these guys can get together in a hotel room over a case of beer and hammer this out. But I think in this case, it's getting a little bit more serious. But you know, back to the ma-and-pa operation, you know, a team like Winnipeg, a lot of teams in this league, they just can't afford to have this happen. So I think that it might be negotiating or bargaining at this point, and when it really comes to crunch, if this thing isn't done by June, that I really do think together that they'll get together and hammer it out, because they cannot afford to have this happen.
Yeah, you know, Herb, the one thing, you know, we talked around Grey Cup times, and people remember there was a lot of talk about the Canadian, the ratio, the quota, and that being an issue. But it seems to me, you know, from, again, what I've been hearing, and I certainly from your story and talking to Dave Naylor at our place, the underlying issue here seems to be, you know, you talked about how negotiations used to be done and, you know, Hugh Campbell and working things out. But Hugh Campbell was the architect of a deal that gave the players 56% of revenues.
Yeah.
And there's a bunch of owners in this league right now who are sitting saying, you know, you got new stadiums coming online in several places. They think they're going to have a big TV increase in the next deal. And you've got some teams that are just maybe are going to be profitable for the first time. And owners saying, why are we giving these guys 56%? Or, you know, I don't want to give them 56 cents of every new dollar I bring in.
Yeah, absolutely, Stephen. I don't think anymore that it is this the import ratio. It's not what it's coming down to. It is coming down to this 56% of league revenues. And the way it was explained to me yesterday, there's 5,000 extra seats going into Molson Stadium. Well, if those 5,000 seats are sold, the league, you know, and it stays at this 56% figure, what in fact the league would be doing is would be writing a six-figure check rather to the players on an annual basis. So certainly the owners are saying, look, we cannot continue with this 56%. And again, according to the documents that I have received, the Players Association are willing to concede that 56% for the first 3 years of a four-year contract. So if that's the case, I don't know why they can't come to some kind of an agreement.
Ed, one of the things from having covered the CFL a few years ago, there was always a split between the import players, between the American players and the Canadian players when it came to sort of the, you know, quote-unquote political awareness. The understanding was generally that a lot of times the Canadian offensive lineman was one of the, you know, that was the Cadillac position in a lot of ways. You could make a lot of money as a veteran Canadian offensive lineman. Are the import players as engaged in this process now? Or I should say, are they more engaged in this process now than they were previously? Or is this thing still pretty much being led by the Canadian, by the non-import player group?
You know, that's a great question. I know that until recently, Milt Stegall, was an import, was one of the Bomber player reps, and he was very, very engaged. But then you get a guy coming in, a first-year American who can't even, you know, point out Winnipeg on a map and gets here. He doesn't know anything about it. He's just looking for a paycheck. So I think that's dependent on the locker room, dependent on the player. I think the guys that live in Canada year-round and, you know, the more veteran players are a lot more engaged, a lot more aware of what's going on. But there's a whole pile of players who are just here to get money and get a paycheck and looking to extend their football careers, and they don't care at all about this kind of stuff, to be honest.
Herb, I mean, the Alouettes have a lot of guys who've been around for a while. I mean, one of the keys to their success, I would argue, is the stability of the player core. What is that locker room like? Is there an awareness of what's going on the part of the import player?
I would say that, as you said, Jeff, certainly the guys, the import players, a guy like Anthony Calvillo, who has spent his entire career here and spends the year-round Montreal resident, yes, he certainly is very aware. I would say some of the younger guys, and there are not a lot of them, but the younger guys who basically return to the States in the off-season, they probably do not know what's going on, and I would dare say that they're sitting at home today probably thinking, well, if there's a lockout, what happens to my contract? Do I become a free agent? Can I then start shopping my services around? They certainly are. The other guys are very much aware. Scott Flory, their guard, he's the second vice president, so he's going to be keeping them very abreast of what's going on, and then he's joined on the executive committee by Ben Cahoon, another guy, a veteran who spent a lot of years here.
I just want to clarify, Herb. So the players are saying they would come that they would detach the cap from revenues for 4 years, but then would want to reattach it after
they would,
the fifth?
My information that the Players Association are prepared to agree to eliminate the 56% for the first 3 years of a four-year agreement in order to let clubs, to better generate revenue.
So what would the cap number be based on then?
That I don't know. They are they are certainly calling for, proposing rather, an increase in the cap. They want it to be $4.4 million this year, 2010, and it would peak at $4.7 million in 2013. But again, as I said, they're only willing, they're proposing a four-year contract, and they would only agree to this for the first 3 years.
And is there, and this, now the specter of replacement players is always raised in this, but I would think Andy Skablaw, certainly in Quebec and potentially in BC, would make it very hard for them to operate with replacements in Canada.
That is my understanding as well, that Quebec and BC are the two provinces in which you would not be allowed to bring in replacement players.
So that's that. This is, Ed, we haven't had this kind of a confrontation in the CFL, but I wonder if even the specter of this, if we get to training camp and this becomes the dominant story, which I think is entirely possible given where we are right now and how far apart they are, how does that affect the CFL and kind of its progress towards, getting away from off-field issues, its quest for legitimacy in some ways?
Well, that's a great question. I think it's been relatively calm for the last little while. The league's experienced quite a bit of growth in the last 10 years and relative stability. And you're talking about expanding into markets like Ottawa and the Maritimes. I think a lot of that gets stained by something like this. It's something the league has to resolve. And, the details that Herbs is explaining where the players would give up that 56%, to me, is pretty enticing. If I'm an owner who is trying to make money, is trying to make this thing work and seeing progress, I'm all over that because this is always a year-to-year, gate-driven league still. And for every step forward, this kind of thing is two steps back, and it's something that has to get resolved for the good of the league because it's a black stain. If you start talking about replacement players while you're in training camp or a week to go to training camp, how does that affect season ticket sales and corporate sponsorship? That has a lot of people bailing out.
We're joined by Herb Zurkowski with the Montreal Gazette and Ed Tate of the Winnipeg Free Press talking about Canadian Football League labor issue. And Ed, I'll ask you, the Winnipeg Blue Bombers are in a position where they need to do a lot of work to regain the support of their fan base quickly, I would argue. That's a pretty demanding city. It's a pretty astute city when it comes to the football team. What do you think the reaction, and Herb, you can chime in this as well, what would the reaction of the fan be to any type of stoppage?
I don't think they'd stomach it at all, and there's so many things you mentioned that they have a lot of repairing of the brand to do, so to speak, in Winnipeg. They announced today an operational loss of 2009 operations of $1.2 million.
That was Lyle Bauer's parting gift, was it not?
Yeah, exactly. they had quite a big cleanup after the Mike Kelly regime. And so, there's a lot of work that has to be done here. And if you start talking about work stoppage and replacement players, and then there's also this other thing that's kind of hovering over Winnipeg, and it's the possible return of the NHL. So if you couple that together with all those whispers, you just watch people bail on this league and that franchise and go after an NHL team. If an NHL team was to arrive here in October, or we were told in late summer that a team was coming back for the following season, that's going to be the Bombers' biggest challenge to begin with. And then if you couple that with a possible work stoppage and replacement players, my goodness, what a... You talk about damaging the brand. That's you've got to start all over again then.
Yeah, obviously I agree with Eddie. I think in places like Winnipeg, certainly Regina, my God, it would be devastating. I dare say in other places such as Toronto, Montreal, Vancouver, I don't think people would barely bat an eyelash. Certainly in this city you have... You have the Jazz Festival, you have the Film Festival, you have all these other things that are going on in the summer, and people also are just counting down the days until the Canadians open training camp. The Canadians rule supreme here. Now, having said that, they are expanding the stadium here. They're going to have 5,000 more seats, and they are the defending Grey Cup champions, and you want to build on that momentum. Right now, the Alouettes are a feel-good story. Usually going into the season, we're talking about how they managed to lose another Grey Cup. Well, this year, lo and behold, they won the Grey Cup. They found a way to win it, and I'm sure everyone sitting in their offices today, you know, they don't want to be talking about work stoppages. They want to start training camp with a new collective bargaining agreement and build on this feel-good story.
Herb and Ed, listen, thank you very much for joining us today and explaining this to us. And as Mr. Brent says, it's a story that I'm sure we will be following right up to training camp. I don't think this is going to go away. Maybe I was guilty of being a little flip about this at the start, but there appears to be some seriousness behind this.
Yeah.
Take care, guys. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thanks, fellas.
Thank you. That was Herb Zurkowski, the Montreal Gazette, and Ed Tate of the Winnipeg Free Press. And, well, there is enough money in the CFL to have a labor crisis. Who knew?
Well, I think it's the fact that if you're an owner in that league and you finally get a chance to make some dough, you're going to jump on it. And if you have to do that on the backs of the players, I think they will do that.
Absolutely. This is Primetime Sports and the Fan Radio Network, Rogers Sportsnet and Sirius 97. McLean is just around the corner.
Primetime Sports is on the Fan Radio Network, Rogers Sportsnet and Sirius Channel 97.
So I made a mistake earlier. I got to admit this.
Okay, because Doug McLean is right out the
door.
Well,
speaking of, yeah. Well, when I talked about his banning, yes. I said it happened because of an incident when he was in here live. But it was in fact he was on a cell phone in Prince Edward Island. It was a phone dispute with McCowan. Okay. I was still here. I was an innocent bystander. But the actual banning took place with McLean far, far away.
Oh, he's ready. Look at that.
Oh, I know this. He lives for this. You know, just the chance to get back in this room and. It's very important to him, I know.
We are talking, of course, about Doug McLean from Hockey Central and Sportsnet, who will be in the same seat that Kypros was in.
Unless McCowan's
yesterday.
Driving down here at 100 miles an hour from his place to bar the door.
I don't think so. He's on special assignment. He was covering the Champions League.
Yes, he may well have been.
I mean, this is a rumor going around. We will be joined by Doug McLean, all kidding aside, I guess after the clock goes to the bottom and comes back up. I just wanted to say one little thing about the CFL before we rush out, though. Knowing how hard it was for baseball to come back from a labor stoppage, boy, I would think the CFL would want to think twice about cutting the tie of consistency with its fans. I just don't think it works. I think guys have to think very carefully about that, and hopefully cooler or more intelligent heads will prevail. When we come back, we'll take you home in Primetime Sports with Doug McLean in studio, along with Stephen Brunt and Jeff Blair. This is Primetime Sports on the Fan Radio Network, Rogers Sportsnet, and Sirius 97.
Primetime Sports is on the Fan Radio Network, Rogers Sportsnet, and Sirius Channel 97.
Welcome back to Primetime Sports for April 7th, 2010. Jeff Blair sitting in for Bob McCowan, who's on vacation, joined by regular co-host Stephen Brunt, and the man across the table is Doug McLean. On primetime.
Well,
who'd have thunk it?
Well, McCowan, I mean, there's been such a demand to get me on, and McCowan has to take days off so that they can get me in here to get a little buzz going.
I think that's how,
show,
that's how it worked. Was that right?
Yeah, exactly. Because he knows I refuse to go on with him.
And rare is the hockey guy who can bring the same energy and the same zest that McLean
does. Kypros
is good.
He tries.
Kypros is good.
He tries. He has the sentences are not easy.
No, but no one. I would argue that no one has completely recaptured the magic of you and Bob in studio together.
No. And you know what? Where was I recently? At the Olympics.
Yes.
And people continually come up to me and said, "Was that fake?"
Yeah,
I said, "No, that was not fake."
Yeah, a couple of people asked me that question too.
Was that a put on? No, it wasn't.
I heard it.
I was on the side of a highway.
I heard that. Honest to God, when I heard it in the air, I was laughing because I thought, you know, for the first 10 minutes, I thought this was funny. Then around minute 15, I'm going, there's something at work here.
Well, friends were in the restaurant waiting for dinner, and I slipped out to do this interview, and I couldn't stay at the restaurant. I had to go down the highway because there was no reception where I was. So I went down, and my buddy's in the car. There's a bungalow right on the highway, and I mean, they're looking out the window. I'm on the side of the highway screaming my brains out. It was great stuff.
Yeah, that's good radio, too.
And I saw Bob at the Olympics.
Yes.
And I got a chance to talk to him. Yeah. It was day two, and I said, oh, great. We can officially start the Olympics. Bob McCowan is in town.
I thought it was going to be like the Olympic truce, right, where they stop wars and stuff during the Olympics.
He shook hands. We had a nice, cordial time. And I mean, that's not the first time. I talked to him the day after. Yeah. So it's not the first. I mean, hey.
But that didn't.
I mean, the Germans and the Allies played soccer during Christmas in World War I.
Well, see, I think the Olympics was perfect. It brought the whole country together. Yeah. But it didn't stick.
Well, so no, it's fine with me. I just
You'd be willing to.
I chuckle at him. But anyway, it's fine.
Do you see what I'm doing here, by the way?
What?
I'm turning the page.
Yeah, that's
okay. I'm turning the page.
Someday one of these days it's going to be like the Martin and Lewis thing. You know, like I'm going to broker it. That it's going to be the surprise and Bob will cry.
Yeah. Well, he's the guy.
It'll be lovely.
The Nobel Prize is up for grabs.
He's being hurt by it, but anyway, it's fine.
So, I've been dying to ask you about this, but I can't because that Phoenix thing, Doug. Mm. You know, doesn't seem to be going so well.
Well. No, you know what? I mean, give great credit to the whole hockey operations because they've done a great job.
No, hats off to Dave Tippett.
Yeah, that's been spectacular. Yeah. Dave King, Dave Tippett, Don Maloney.
Yeah, absolutely.
The group have done a good job. I was told the other day, it came out that they lost $20 million. And I said, that doesn't sound right to me. $20 million doesn't sound like the right number. Then I was told last night, no, that's after the guaranteed revenue sharing that apparently is in place.
So they get that, even if they don't hit the targets.
Right. I don't know if that's been officially approved, but I know it's in place. So that would mean the losses were more in the 35 million range. So, it's not going that well. I just got a note that Carolina's having a big press conference tomorrow. I think that may be the All-Star game going to Carolina in 2011, which I believe it was supposed to be in Phoenix. So it'll be interesting to see. Now, as they say in PEI, I'm not telling you that it's the truth. I'm just telling you what I heard.
But
just
that would
clarify that.
But that would be an interesting, if that were true, let's say that they have decided to move the 2011 All-Star game from Phoenix to Carolina, that would suggest something, because if you were welcoming, say, Jerry Reinsdorf into the fold and trying to rebuild hockey in Phoenix,
you would want to give him an All-Star game.
You'd give him that.
You would think. And again, I'm not saying it's fact. I'm just saying it's what I heard. So, and it may also be. Let's not forget when you host the draft, as we did in Columbus my last year there, or an All-Star game. It really it encompasses your whole staff.
Yeah.
It is a major load. So maybe it's more of the fact that they can't handle, the extra burden of that workload. That could be part of it as well. But I mean, that's everybody that's a franchise that's scrambling, you're always trying to get the All-Star game, the draft to get your fans more engaged.
What do you think? You know, the mood of the governors now has got to be the key to this thing, because obviously Gary's going to want to try and pull a rabbit out of his hat here one way or another. But, if we're down to, Jerry Reinsdorf shopping for a bargain, the money that they have invested in Phoenix, both in buying the team and in the operating losses this year, looking like it's about to evaporate into thin air. If I'm a governor, this is the point where I say we can't do this anymore.
Well, what's interesting is also the price tag on franchises. I was told that the Tampa Bay sold for around 80 to 85 million.
If you separate it from the arena, right?
No. I was told all in 80 to 85 plus 15 that the NHL had put in to the deal that had advanced them.
So $100 million for the whole shooting match?
For the whole shooting match. They don't own the arena. They own the lease to the arena, but they don't own the arena. So I was told that was the number. I got it from a fairly reliable source. So I think it's pretty, I'm sure it's within a couple of million of being accurate. So again, is that 160, 140 price tag we're hearing in Phoenix, is that a real number now? Or is that beaten down because of the recent sales? It'll be interesting to see what the price is.
It can't be a real number there, Doug.
Well, it can't be, except, what's the league got into it all of a sudden? I mean, they paid $140. They've got $10 million in legal bills. And obviously, they got the $60 million lawsuit against Jerry Moyes out there to try to recoup. So, it's going to be really interesting how that unfolds. I feel for Jim Balsi. I know there was mistakes made. I got into the situation with him late in August, and it was well down the road. I feel bad that you got a guy sitting there. Mistakes were made, but a hockey fan that really wanted a team, Doesn't look like it's
going to happen. Well, and it would have preserved franchise value, too.
Yeah. Well, it would have increased it.
Yes.
Substantially at 245.
So
it's disappointing. So we'll see where it all shakes out.
You know, from a previous sports life, I know some people who are involved with Jerry Reinsdorf and some of his advisors and some of the people who are actually who do his numbers for him. And Brent and I have talked about this, but they've maintained all along that the Ice Edge people don't take them seriously, essentially. How do you feel? I mean, how would you read into that? And the guy I'm talking to is an OBS guy, and he just told me we don't look at them as a serious.
You know, I had heard that the Ice Edge group was counting on this whole bond situation that was supposed to come down, and when that blew up, it really threw a wrinkle into their whole thing. I don't know them. I've been told that, you know, they've been trying to raise money for months. I was in the same boat in Tampa. We were $15 million short. We just couldn't. And I say to my partners now, thank God we couldn't raise that $15 million. And they didn't want to do a note with us at the time. And they ended up doing a note for well over $100 million for that deal. So thank goodness it didn't work. But you know what? I Reinsdorf, he's not a hockey fan, but his son owns a USHL team.
Yes, he does.
And has for a long time. His son and a brother-in-law have been in the hockey business for a number of years at the minor league level. I've been to the Board of Governors meetings at the USHL level with his son, and he's a big-time hockey fan. So is there a connection there, and is Ice Edge real? I would say they would love to get it in Reinsdorf's hands.
Yeah, but what I keep wondering about, and this is where Winnipeg comes into the conversation, is if the real or even perceived value of an NHL team in a bottom-end market is now 70 million or 60 million or 80 million or 50 million, which is, you know, 1991 expansion price. There's going to be some nervous bankers out there, aren't there?
Yeah. I mean, there's no doubt about it. I mean, you know, when you're funding losses, I heard today, another team, lost 20 million this year. It's been talked about as being a franchise that's available for sale. Well, I mean, do you know how, and the way the credit lines work, because you have to clean it up at the end of the year. There's a cleanup clause where you have to clean up the debt. So, and I was saying to a buddy of mine, do you know how rich you have to be to write a $20 million check? I mean, we're not talking a guy that's worth $200 million here or $300 million. We're talking about wealthy people when you've got to write a check for $20 million. So, yeah, I mean, you know, to renew credit lines, to get banks engaged. And I know Gary spends probably most of his time working feverishly to make sure all these deals are getting in place and people are getting their credit lines. It's challenging time in all sports.
So what about Winnipeg?
Well, you know what, Winnipeg, and I've said it to you guys for a couple of years, you need $90 million out of a community to run a viable NHL franchise. We were at $70 million in Columbus. $70 million is what we could pull out from a total package. I'm talking building, team, the whole thing. I see Winnipeg as a Columbus, 800,000 to 900,000 people, a challenging situation. There's no doubt they'll sell the building, but that's 58% of your revenue.
Right.
Can you pull $20 million corporately out of there? Can you get $10, $12 million on a TV deal out of there? That would be the challenge. I'd love to see a team in Winnipeg. If you have a David Thompson backing
it, see, there's the X
that
factor.
Changes the whole perspective. I mean, that's a guy that you would love to have in the league. Let's not kid ourselves. Mm-hmm. That's the type of owner that you desperately need in the league, as long as he... I don't know him. I don't know if he has a passion for hockey, but he's certainly the ideal owner. It's the Vinnick that Gary was able to hook up with at the outdoor game in Boston and be able to put him into Tampa. Hopefully it'll solidify that situation.
Yeah.
We're on with Doug McLean of Rogers Sportsnet and Hockey Central. We're talking about the Winnipeg situation, the Phoenix situation. I'd like to I'd like to squeeze in a break here and come back and talk about the Calgary Calgary Flames if we could.
Sure.
That would be great. This is Primetime Sports on the Fan Radio Network, Rogers Sportsnet and Sirius Channel 97.
Primetime Sports is on the Fan Radio Network, Rogers Sportsnet and Sirius Channel 97.
Back with the radio/TV show for April 7th, Primetime Sports. Jeff Blair sitting in for Bob McCowan. McCowan will be back on Monday. Joined by my co-host, Stephen Brunt. Not my co-host, joined by co-host Stephen
Brunt.
That's
right, sidekick co-host.
Sidekick co-host, and across the way, Doug McLean of Hockey Central and Rogers Sportsnet.
Who will not be here Monday.
And by the way, I didn't get dressed up for you guys. I have to go on TV after.
Oh,
that's fine.
I go on real TV after.
Is that right?
Oh,
this is on real TV?
No, I just wanted to make sure that, you know.
You don't have to wear a tie, though.
No. Oh,
thank God.
Mandatory anti-tie at Sportsnet.
Mandatory anti-tie. I kind of like the tie, but, you know, that's the rules. That's the rules, and I go by the rules.
I like the no-tie thing.
When you don't have a real job, you take the other jobs really, you toe the line.
Darn right.
You know?
Well, I know we do.
Yes, absolutely.
As you can tell.
I saw you with your Alouettes. Was it an Alouettes?
Expos.
Expos. Expos. I thought that was great.
Wait till you see the jersey I wear during the World Cup. Could cause a crisis. We were talking about the Phoenix Coyotes, Winnipeg Jets, NHL, NHL financial issues, and I just wanted to change focus for a little bit to some actual, honest to God, on the ice hockey stuff. Calgary Flames.
Yeah.
How does this team not make the playoffs?
Well, you know, it's interesting what happens. You get into a situation a year ago where you trade for Olli Jokinen. Mm-hmm. You give up Lombardi, who's a 15, 18 goal guy, speed guy, skill guy, second, third liner. You bring in a Jokinen, and you give up the first. You have Camilleri there. You think you've got some support for a Ginla. You know, all of a sudden, you make a decision that you can't get Camilleri done because you had the $5 million tied to Jokinen, and all of a sudden you got cap issues. Make a decision they want to, you know, I'm not sure when they brought Bomeister in that the decision was not made then that they had to consider moving Phaneuf. You know, for whatever reason, I've known Dion since he was 8 years of age. You know, I know his parents, you know, we go way back. So I'm not convinced there wasn't a movement afoot to make a decision there, Bomeister over Phaneuf. And all of a sudden, there's no offense. I mean, to think that this team is 29th in the league in offense is hard to believe.
It is.
It really is hard to believe. The blame goes to Iginla, where he had about a 38-game stretch this year that he didn't score a goal in.
Yep.
I mean, three goals in about 38, 39 games.
Right.
Well, when you're a $7 million guy, you got to score. But when I look at the supporting cast, who's going to get him the puck? Who's the guy? Stajan? No, Stajan's not. Stajan's a second, third, a second and a half liner to me. So, you know, you just don't have the supporting cast. The pressure builds on Iginla. There's no offense from the back end because Phaneuf's gone because he was a 20-goal scorer there. So that back end, all of a sudden, Regier's not a point producer. Bomeister never was a point producer. Ends up with three goals this year. He had one goal in the last 62 games. Where's the offense going to come from? Rene Bork was their number two guy. So, you know, it there's a challenge there. They've freed up some cap issues, but I'm not sure how they're going to fix it right now.
Well, are they going to fix it with the same guys? Because, you know, you got the brother act. You've got, you know, I've heard talk about going all the way up to Ken King, you know, right up the top of the organization, whole house cleaning. You know, how do you unpick this thing? It's not simple. You can't just fire the coach, right?
I mean, they've had four coaches in the last 5 years.
Yeah.
You know, so to me, Brent Sutter, you know, you bring him in, he's a quality guy, he's a quality coach. You know, I mean, did he have the horses to play any different than they did? I'm not convinced he did. You know, Daryl in trouble, I hope not. You know, I like them. I go way back with the Sutters from when Brian was with me in St. Louis and Dwayne was my assistant coach in Florida. So I hope that doesn't happen. Is Iginla going to be moved? Is it time to break up the core of this group and start over? How do you trade Jerome Iginla? $7 million cap hit, 1 year left and he's unrestricted.
And
what price are you going to pay for a one-year guy?
He's 33. So, you know, like flipping him, like, because there's this fantasy that they might be able to flip into Boston for the first pick.
Not a chance.
There's no chance, right?
Not for the Leafs pick, maybe Boston's pick, but certainly not. So it's a challenging time for them. And, you know, to retool is really tough. It's tough to retool in those markets. You know, look what Berkey's going through here. 29th? Who would have? Do you think he thought he'd be 29? So it's tough to retool because you're picking late. You haven't got I look at their prospect list. It's thin. Where do you go? You know, challenging time.
As someone who has been a general manager, I mean, coach and general manager, do you buy into the idea that even with a really good player, even somebody like Jerome Iginla, there simply comes a time where the guy's, you know, his time in that city is up. Because we see it in a lot of sports where a guy, regardless of how good he is, it's just time to go. It's time to cut the cord. Do you get that sense? When you were general manager, did you get that sense with some players?
You know what? I was never in that situation because we're an expansion team. So we never got to that, but I believe it is. And you know, you've got the Iginla question right now. You've got the Joe Thornton question in San Jose that if they don't have great success, and I mean get by the first, second round, that question, the Sedin question was there in Vancouver. Limited success at postseason. They made a big commitment. What happens if they get beat in the first round? So, yeah, there comes a time where you got to say, I've got to change the core, especially in a cap scenario. It's shocking when I look at teams. I looked at the Florida Panthers today. They've got $48 million committed for next year for 17 players. You got the Leafs. I mean, It's not unique that these teams are, everybody's up against it. The Columbus Blue Jackets, 18 players signed, $48 million.
That's why they call it a salary cap.
So everybody goes to it. So, you know, it's really a challenging time in most markets to try and piece it all together, because I don't care how smart you are, you get in trouble. And Kenny Holland is the smartest guy out there, that everybody says. Well, if he didn't have an $800,000 goalie.
Exactly. Yeah.
And had a $4 million one like everybody else, he'd be in big trouble. So, you know, it's tough. And it's tough to change your group. It's tough to do what you said, because everybody's got cap issues.
I just don't think you get value for Iginla. You don't get the kind of value you need at this
point. Not a chance.
And, you know, he's the identity, you know, he's so much of his identity and the team's identity is tied up together. You know, they traded Nieuwendijk for him, right, as a kid.
I don't move Iginla. I do whatever it is to get the right guy to go with him. I remember with Nash, you know, I think back and I'm sitting, and I may have told you this story. We're in Vancouver. It's the second last game of the season. We're sitting in fourth place. I mean, fourth from the bottom. That's what we used to look at where we were was from the bottom. We're fourth. We beat Vancouver. We have this. Nash is terrific. Zhirinov is unbelievable. We have this great party after. And we slipped to six. Okay. Six from the bottom. Fourth wins the lottery. Ovechkin goes to Washington. I get Picard. He's playing in Syracuse. Still. No, he's traded to Phoenix. So, you know what? These guys, you know, it's funny. You got Chicago. They pick up a Taves at third, you know, and you get Kane at one, and you get, you know, some really important pieces. They're hard to find. But I would do whatever I could to complement Iginla before I'd make that move.
So who do you like right now? You know, it's interesting to me that, you know, even with Ovechkin in his funk, that Washington's still winning. And I think that bodes well for them. I know what their goaltending is going to be, but you know, if they can win with him still kind of not being quite himself, there's always the possibility that he turns into himself again in the playoffs.
I said this at the start of the year, and people thought I was crazy. Two of my favorite players in the NHL are Jonathan Toews, who I love. I said he should have been on the Olympic team a year ago. Mm-hmm. Nick Backstrom, who was the fourth overall pick in the draft that I got Broussard at six. Is a superstar in the league. He's almost got the same number of points as Crosby. He complements Ovechkin. He is the perfect piece. He makes Washington go. You watch the Washington Capitals, and when the other night, Ovechkin was invisible in the game, and Backstrom was a star in the game. Ovechkin gets the second star of the game. Backstrom was the best player on the ice. He is a tremendous piece. I think Washington, for me, in the East, I know they give up chances. I know Umberger was quoted. I like the way they play. I love the way they play.
Doug, we have to run. And I don't want to run because I enjoyed this.
I'm sure you'll be back soon.
Yeah, I'm usually on here on a regular basis. In case you haven't noticed, it's just with a different host.
Well, I'll probably see you in June. Doug, listen, again.
When McCowan gets sick again, I'll see you guys.
Absolutely. Thank you very much for being on this. That's Doug McLean of Hockey Central and Rogers Sportsnet. This is Primetime Sports and the Fan Radio Network, Rogers Sportsnet and Sirius 97.
Primetime Sports is on the Fan Radio Network, Rogers Sportsnet, and Sirius Channel 97.
Back with the stretch run in Primetime for April 7th, 2010. That went well.
Oh, Doug's fun. Oh, he's lots of fun. That wasn't the issue.
I know.
That wasn't the issue at all. The issue is deep and dark and cannot be revealed.
Yeah, I'm just kind of, I'm wondering, is there another shoe to fall on this? Is there?
Which? How?
I don't know. I'm intrigued now.
Okay. Well, talk to the real host when he's here and you can ask him. You can make the case.
I'll leave that up to you. We were talking about this off the air. I mean, Doug is, he just knows stuff. And what I like about him is he's sort of not beholden to the great NHL thing.
No, you know, Doug's a loyal hockey guy and he loves the game and he likes the league and has worked, you know, at different levels in the league, but he also knows how the business works. And how the business works in a place like Columbus, especially,
right.
or in a place like Florida to a degree, but certainly in a place like Columbus where, you know, it's a struggle and it has been, you know, it has been a struggle in a lot of these franchises. Deliverance was not at hand in terms of big, huge TV dollars and things that would make it more comfortable. And now, you know, with franchise values going in the other direction, there's no quick fix here, you know.
No.
Things are going to change. We talk about this potentially with the NHL all the time. Well, what if something's going to change?
It seems different this time.
Yeah,
it seems legitimately different. Well, that's it for us. For co-host Stephen Brunt, I'm Jeff Blair saying thanks for joining the nation's most watched and listened to sports talk presentation. You're going to be here tomorrow.
Yes, indeed.
Absolutely. On the Fan Radio Network, Rogers Sportsnet, and Sirius Channel 97, this is Primetime Sports, and we are out of here. Bye-bye.